People don't talk in elevators.
I have observed that, sir. Fascinating.
Which version of the OS are these ship's computers running? Do the food synthesizers use the Gupta or the Katzman glucose matrix? Have you ever considered that the Prime Directive is not only not ethical, but also illogical? Do you like eggplant?
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between the Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, sitting on Cam's shoulders whilst reciting Gilbert and Sullivan.
That's how we do every podcast. That's our warm-up.
I know. I'm just stating fact.
Sound check.
Yeah.
And we're here this week to talk about the events at New York Comic Con, as well as the latest Short Trek Q&A.
Yeah, maybe we just cut right to the point. So we all told everybody that we'd be doing the Shockwave Parts 1 and 2 review of Star Trek Enterprise.
But surprise!
Surprise! We're not very good with the calendars,
yeah.
And so there's a lot that came out. So I think people are probably most excited to talk about Star Trek Picard. We've got a brand new trailer, some revelations there. Cam, what is there a split second, a moment that really popped out to you, and then we can kind of like go into the granular a little bit later on?
I know the one that fans were probably the most excited for, but for me, it was the TOS Romulan ship.
Oh, that caught my eye too. That was so cool.
I was so excited to see that.
So what was your kind of your theorizing about this? Can I give you my theory here? It's like we have like this like ragtag destroyed Romulan Empire, and probably the remaining Romulans left. Look, if you can pull a ship out of mothballs, let's go with that. The other kind of theory is that maybe it could just be an updated version of a Romulan ship and they want to go kind of retro, like the designers on the series.
Sure.
What are you leaning towards?
The former, that it was some old ship that they were using in a period of desperation or something like that. I mean, this thing belongs in a museum, but it looks gorgeous, and I was just so excited to see it. And wow. It reminded me a little bit of seeing the Yorktown in Star Trek Beyond, where it's like this old ship. I kind of like that when they reach into the past and go like, you know what, let's bring back a model that people recognize that's really cool.
What, the Yorktown? You mean the space station?
Sorry, not the Yorktown.
Oh, the Franklin.
The Franklin.
Oh,
yeah.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah. No, it's just a very cool moment. But it really has nothing to do with the characters or the plot or anything like that.
Nope. But that's what excited me, Tyler.
That's what excites you, yes. Shiny objects.
That's right.
Yeah, so we are getting a little bit more information, but Cam, it really doesn't tell us anything that we didn't already kind of speculate on, where Picard's journey is set off by a mysterious young woman who comes to him and needs his help.
Right. It's a tried and true story.
We've maybe seen it before, but like there were some exciting moments. I still keep going back to like Seven of Nine, seeing her like doing like the John Woo double fisting, like her guns shooting up like whatever she's at. I'm just like,
or is it a John Wick
moly.
Now?
With his gun katye.
Yeah.
You know? I always associate it with John Woo.
Me too.
He was the one who really originated that. So
for sure, but they tend to reach to current trends, right? They tend to ignore the earlier one. I feel like this might be a John Wick thing.
Look, if doves come floating by the screen,
then
we'll know it's a John Woo reference there.
But is it robot doves?
Cybernetic doves.
Right.
Yeah. So the Seven of Nine stuff is exciting. The other things that I think fans are loving. Actually, Cam, when Riker and Troy appeared on screen, you had a hilarious comment that cracked me up. What did you say exactly?
I said it makes me really sad to know that they wound up in the Nexus.
And I think another person in our WhatsApp group was commenting, or maybe it was you, I don't know, there was wood chopping that we did not get to see. There were eggs that were not cracked. It was all very disappointing.
Well, they can't give away everything.
I know. But we have so much to look forward to.
And like young children in the background being like, Dad! And I'm like, well, hold on now. This does seem very Nexus-like.
Does Picard ride up on a horse to greet the Rikers and Troy family?
I mean, it would not be out of character.
It makes me think of that episode Starship Mine where Picard raced back to the ship to grab his saddle. Maybe he's getting his saddle for one more go around or something like that.
Does Picard enjoy horses? I mean, we know that he gets on the horse in Generations with Kirk, but is that like a Picard thing?
Other than Starship Mine, yeah. I don't really recall him making any horse references. I mean, he's no one Captain Pike, you know, that's right. For sure.
Or Kirk.
Or Kirk, you know. Yeah. Actually, I think the only horse reference that we got with Kirk, though, was in Star Trek Generations. And I remember Ron Moore said in the commentary he only did it to just, like, he was just totally trying to, like, get in the good graces of Will Shatner, or Bill Shatner. So that was kind of funny. But, okay, maybe if we think about it, like, in a broader perspective, what are we to make out of the marketing campaign, you know, that they're doing for Star Trek Picard? Is it just to give us a little taste of morsels? Do they already know that pretty much the audience is sold? Just make it look exciting enough, and you'll have even more CBS All Access subscribers.
Yeah, it also seems like they're marketing the recognizable elements a lot. Like, the new crew, I really don't know anything about any of these people. Whereas, you know, they're showing cool Seven of Nine moments, they're showing Borg cubes and, you know, Borg stuff that we all recognize, iconography. We're seeing Hugh now in this latest trailer, we're seeing Riker and Troy, we're seeing Data. It's very much marketing the elements that TNG fans and Star Trek fans in general would love.
I still don't have any sort of grasp on the new crew, except we are getting more information about them now than we have at any other point. It's still bizarre to me that they're not taking them out to these, like, comic cons or Star Trek conventions and introducing them to the audiences in, I don't want to use the word proper, but in a more formal way. It just seems like that's how you're going to get excitement. But I think they know. It's kind of that whole member berries sort of situation where, if for marketing concerns, you know, do new fans really care if Alison Pill is going to be in the new show? Like, no.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen these new characters, and I don't know that there's a lot you could throw out there that fans would be like, holy smokes, I gotta watch this show.
No.
They may be interesting characters when we actually get to know them, but it's tough to get it across in like 5 seconds or 10 seconds of a trailer.
And I'm completely guilty of it, because when I saw like a clear shot of Hugh in this one,
yeah,
I was like, oh snap, it's Hugh. Like, and this is a character who was in like two episodes back in like Star Trek The Next Generation. So it's just kind of funny that, yeah, I can be judgmental, but the fact of the matter is like, I think the marketing people kind of know what they're doing, though.
I mean, they're throwing Picard fencing into this one, too, which is just...
That was amazing.
It was.
It was so nerdy, but I was like, I don't care. I don't care.
And, like, the big hologram of the Enterprise D.
That was gorgeous.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
So it's all stuff that fans can get really excited for. I am curious, though, when we actually watch the show, what percentage of it is recognizable elements?
Like total fan service-y sort of stuff?
Yeah, yeah. Like, I feel like that stuff is going to be, it's there as, like, you know, the icing on the cake, but I don't think that's the cake.
Yeah, but I think it's going to be kind of, instead of, like, front and center, a lot of stuff in the background. You know, I think there will be, like, a lot of Easter eggs. Just if you're wandering around his chateau in France, there's going to be some nods to things that we may recognize from before, you know?
Right.
I'll say this about the Riker and Troy stuff. Like, I just kind of assumed that we would have encountered them on a view screen on the USS Titan.
I thought the same, yeah.
And I'm actually okay with this. It's like, no, these are people well into their 60s.
With young children?
With, yeah, it's the future, man.
That's right.
Yeah. Well into their 60s, you know, it makes sense that they've retired.
Yeah.
So that's what it looks like anyways, you know, retired to the Nexus.
Yeah.
So it did throw me for a loop, but I like that. I want to have my expectations disrupted when it comes to a spinoff like this. And I also believe the producers they're like, yeah, we don't want to just insert people into this as pure fan service. That's why I totally buy if there's no Geordi, there's no Worf in this. I'm still going to be a little crushed, no pun intended, if
Crusher.
There's no Crusher.
Yeah.
You know, because I think she makes way more thematic sense than like a Troy or a Riker appearance, you know?
Yeah.
Can we talk about the Data of it all?
I just want to get to the Riker Troy stuff
for a
second.
Please,
more thing. We see them, they're sitting in this cabin and what have you, and, you know, Picard's sitting with Riker being like, I'm glad you didn't stop me and all that sort of thing. But, like, do you think they're going to contribute much of value to the story, or do you think it's more of a get out there and have an adventure, Picard?
I think what they will contribute is a valuable character moment where it's Picard reconciling with his past decisions. And I think that if you can have somebody that he trusts to really maybe set him on the right path or not talk him out of doing something as he thanks Riker for doing, I think that carries like an emotional heft to it that would not, it's more than just fan service though.
Right.
Story-wise, I don't think it's going to be that, but I'm so much less interested in plot mechanics than I am in just character beats. So that's why I'm okay with this. But if I find, you know, by the end, like it's Geordi showing up at the very end as a Deus Ex Machina to like solve an engineering problem.
Yeah.
Then I'll be rolling my eyes. Cause that, what right. emotional heft does that carry to it? Really?
Right.
Like none. Unless Leah Brahms is there and, you know, then it'll be like emotional heft, more like hilarity. So
I'm hoping every episode ends with Picard going back to the cabin and being like, guys, you wouldn't believe what had happened today.
Every single episode. Every,
and then the credits start rolling as they're all like,
I like that. Yeah, so the data of it all. I think this has the potential to have like the most emotional heft.
Sure.
And I also think it will likely tie into the story.
Yeah.
But Cam, can we talk about the de-aging VFX that we're witnessing right now?
It's a nightmare to look at. Like, it just does not look good.
I would have thought that by now they could have done something here.
Like, it's funny. We've gotten a little spoiled because Marvel does it incredibly well.
Yeah.
We've seen some footage now for the new Scorsese movie, The Irishman, that seems like it's doing it reasonably well. Maybe not quite as well as some of the best Marvel stuff, but reasonably well. I look at this data and I'm like, ugh.
Don't you think if you have a character whose face is painted kind of a goldish hue?
Yeah.
That it would be
Hue of Borg?
Hue of Borg, yeah. That it would be even easier to make it look okay.
I do, but maybe I'm wrong. I'm not a VFX guy. Like, maybe a VFX guy would be like, no, you idiot. It makes it harder. And I'd be like, huh,
but
interesting.
Like, what if there could be, like, other examples? Like, what if it's, like, Brent Spiner doing, like, mocap, you know, and you're recreating more of a CG data, even though that would make me fearful of what they're going to do with that? It's just... I wish if they were going to do it, they could guarantee that it was going to look spectacular and we wouldn't blink an eye. Look, it's we're looking at marketing right now.
Yeah.
Who knows what it's going to look like, you know, in January 23rd,
It's tough to judge CG in early advanced stuff because it's never going to look like what it does in the final product.
Yeah.
But it's funny because, like, you know, I've seen Brent Spiner many a time reasonably up close at these conventions and he actually looks really good. Like, he's not someone who I feel like they have to do a lot of work to make him look like a, you know, data. He's in, like, good shape still. He looks reasonably young still. He looks somehow worse in the data costume. So, and I can't even put my finger on why.
My suspicion, though, is, like, they are just caking makeup on him. Like, he's never had makeup caked on him before.
Right.
And with that, I think that, honestly, like... He's a very slender dude, but I think this makeup is just adding some pounds onto him. And it just doesn't like look like data. But then I think if you're doing some VFX work on it, you'd be able to accommodate for that.
Like it's to just... blend it together a little better. And like the wig looks weird too. Yeah,
the wig is what really threw me. That was the thing that threw me off most when he was like painting, you know, in at the chateau.
Right.
You know, this has got to be a dream, right?
That or some sort of holodeck thing. But yeah, I think dream. In the case of what we see...
I don't think it's a holodeck thing because he's at Picard's chateau, right?
Right. At the in the start of this trailer, yes, I think it's a dream.
Yeah.
Like, when did he wear a wig in the films versus TV show? Was it some of the later films or...
Was he wearing a wig in the later films?
I think he might have been.
Okay.
Maybe I'm wrong, though.
I don't know. I can't speak for it. Like, if you... I'm not one to talk, but if you look at Brent Spiner, there's a bit of a receding hairline there. So it's, you know, I'm sure he's got a wig on for Star Trek Picard circa 2019 versus Brent Spiner 1987.
Sure.
So,
yeah, I don't know. Like, I hope they do fix the data a little bit because, so originally when this trailer dropped, all our friends were talking about
it. Can his new nickname be Big Data?
If you'd like it to be.
Okay. Anyways.
But I mean, like, so all our friends were talking about it online. So I went and watched it on my phone on my break at work. And data didn't look very good.
Yeah.
And, you know, I could see why there was some concern among our friends and everything. And then I went home and I watched it on my television. And it looked so much worse than it did on my phone.
Right.
Which isn't good. You want it to look the opposite, where it actually looks far better when you see it on, like, the big screen or something like that. It did not.
I know. I think, look, we've even commented on our experiences watching how VFX were rendered in Discovery Season 1 versus Season 2.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was because we were watching it on cable television or, like, who knows what the deal is, but we definitely saw a leap between those seasons.
For sure.
I have to believe, looking at the marketing, there will be a leap in the data VFX. Like, from what we're seeing right now to what we actually see realized on screen. But it was funny, like, one of our friends said it looked great. And
yeah,
you and I were both like, huh.
Did Data's eyes look right to you?
To me, it was the hair and the cheeks that threw me off. I didn't really notice his eyes.
I felt like the contacts didn't even look that right.
Okay.
I don't know. It's, I guess they're either not using, you know, 1992 contacts.
No, he saved his 1992 contacts. Yeah, that's why they don't look right, Cam, is because they're all, like, falling apart into his, like, eye sockets.
Like, I'm sure they're much better quality than what he was dealing with, you know, a couple decades ago in the films even. But they just don't quite look right to me,
well, even. Let's be honest. We are kind of being spoiled in that, like, when they were making this in the 90s, they're doing it on, like, different film stock. Now it's, like, 4K digital, you know, film. And it's just, like, it's going to pick up different things then. Even just lighting is going to be different in this. You know, because, like, the deal with Data is, like, I don't know, growing up, like, watching TNG, I was like, oh, yeah, Data's got white skin. Mm-hmm. It took until I was, like, an adult until they actually pointed out to me that he has gold skin.
Yeah.
But because of the lighting on TNG, it looked as if it was white skin. So I wonder how the lighting is going to make a lot of the things that we're so familiar with look different moving forward in Star Trek Picard, because they're going to have a different director of photography on this.
Right. No, for sure. For sure. I just hope when the show airs, Data doesn't distract me. That's all I hope.
I don't
even care if he looks different. Just don't distract me where I'm going, like, ugh, the seams are very visible.
Okay, so we've spent way more time talking about, like, how weird Data looks than anything else, because we're both narcissists and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, what else is popping out to you with regards to maybe what we can expect from the series, or maybe even where Picard is at in his journey? Cam, are you shocked that there is an admiral that he does not get along with? Is that something that's...
That did shock me. That was the true reveal that I was really, you know, my jaw just hit the floor over.
I know.
No, I really like the idea of Picard tackling the idea of being irrelevant. Where you see that where he's going to the desk and the guy's just like, how do you spell your name? He's like, oh yeah, good to see you about. And you kind of get that, like, you know, grimace on Picard's face. But the idea that, like, this guy was a legend in his time, but is he still, you know, this many years later?
I know. And I think that's why I'm kind of curious about where he can go on kind of this more existential journey.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, okay, we really haven't seen much of Starfleet in this. Like, there's the scenes at Starfleet headquarters. Doesn't look as if this show takes place on a starship.
Right.
It looks as if it's more of a kind of ragtag crew, which seems like it could be fun. Also, the is it Michelle Hurd that is? Yeah. Michelle Hurd character. She looks like she could be, like, a fun kind of badass. It looks as if they already have history together. And look, it's been, what, like 17 years since we saw him in action? I'm sure he's made other friends since then.
Sure. She has a little bit of, like, a Vash thing going.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. And even her living at that, like, 24th century trailer park looked kind of cool. And, like, so if she's hooking him up with, like, some... this ragtag crew, I'm okay with not being on another Starship-bound series, but maybe more of a independent sort of thing, you know, like, that kind of seems like fun to me. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, but a lot of fans really do associate Star Trek with being part and parcel with Starfleet. So who knows?
Yeah. And I'd like to know a little bit more about the Allison Pill character. Apparently she's been working towards this her whole life. What that is, I don't know. I look forward to finding out.
Yep. Something.
Something.
Yeah.
So, like, I am very interested to know a little bit of the backstory on these characters.
And there's that guy, we're debating whether he's Romulan or Vulcan, but he's got, like, the coolest look with kind of that almost, like, samurai hair pulled back
kind
sort of
like
deal.
A Kira Kurosawa type idea.
So I'm digging that. It looks like there's another dude that is maybe the captain of his own, like, independent, you know, vessel that I was alluding to.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like a scruffier looking guy, a little bit of like a Han Solo kind of look to him.
Yeah, I'm shocked that people would still want to do a Han Solo kind of character nowadays. It's, like, so unlike Hollywood.
Especially after Solo.
They should have done the Tobias character that Woody Harrelson played. Like, that would have been awesome. So look, I think they're dropping enough elements. I'm excited. January 23rd can't come soon enough. Mm-hmm. For those that, you know, maybe not recall from our Discovery coverage, but I think we'll be watching the episodes as they air and doing reviews. So stay tuned. I think, Cam, people are going to want to follow Star Trek Picard. Like, this is the smartest thing that I think CBS has done, and I think they're certainly going to be dropping lots of money on this, and I think it's going to be an investment worth it.
And I can't wait to find out a little more about what the Borg are up to, what the Romulans are up to.
Do you think we'll get many more details plot-wise before it actually premieres?
Like, I hope not. I think they've shown enough. You show a Borg cube, you show 7 of 9, that's enough. Fans know the Borg are going to be represented on the show. You don't need to do anything more.
Do you think they drop one more, like, not a full-length trailer, but like a little bit, like some marketing material that maybe exposes a little bit more about what's going on? I don't know.
Between now and January.
It's October right now.
Ew.
I just wonder.
I don't know if they'll just start dropping like 30-second TV type spots. You know what I mean? Like, that maybe have some new shots, but aren't going to be giving any. I don't know why you would be giving away more story details at this point. I don't think you need any more. I think fans are going to be on board enough with Data and Riker and Troy and all that. So.
Okay. Okay. Can't wait for Michael Dorn to drop the Star Trek Captain Worf news day of. Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah.
This teaser that they dropped here has me more excited for Discovery than I've been since I think I saw the first trailer back in 2017 for the series.
Here's a question for you. These two trailers dropped.
Yeah.
Which series are you more excited for, Picard or Discovery?
Okay, I know I'm supposed to say Star Trek Picard because we all want Picard, but like I you and I are very, very wary of whether we're going to be disappointed by Star Trek Picard.
The bar is a lot higher for Picard to meet.
Yeah. But with Discovery...
Although that sounds really backhanded at Discovery, and I didn't mean it that way. I meant more in the sense of, like, returning to such an iconic, like, storyline is kind of like the Indiana Jones thing.
Yeah.
If it doesn't deliver, it just hurts that much more. Whereas, like, Discovery, I'm already on board, so I'm excited.
It's like Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1 versus Solo, a Star Wars story.
Sure.
You know, like... and for Discovery, though, like, I think they finally kind of landed on what they should have been doing like this whole time. They finally landed on a series concept. I'm very curious about where it brings our characters. For those that didn't, you know, watch the new teaser, we're going to spoil it for you. But essentially we are, you know, 930 years into the future. The Federation as we know it is really no more. And it looks to be as if Gene Roddenberry's Andromeda is being realized once again on screen. I can't wait till we get to season 4 and it's going to be like Gene Roddenberry's Earth Final Conflict for that season.
I know nothing about that show.
Which one?
Final Conflict.
Okay, I watched like season 1.
Yeah.
As a young boy, I could tell even at the time that it wasn't very good.
Okay.
It like I did not enjoy it. Like,
right.
And so it is essentially about like aliens getting more involved with like life on kind of a modern day Earth sort of deal. Anyway, but with this Discovery stuff, it's just like they're keep dropping all these images, all these lines like that. I'm just totally sucked into. And Kim, how can I be upset if I'm seeing like Morn's species from Deep Space Nine, a Lorian realized on screen. I'm seeing a Cardassian in the backgrounds. You know, like that is exciting to
me. As well as Trill.
Yeah, so we had some hints about them in Discovery, but like there's even like images of like Burnham visiting like a Trill homeworld, and we're seeing her like around the symbiont pools, which to me that's cool because who more is the Cam, you're not going to get the reference, but who more is the Bran Stark of the Star Trek universe than the Trill symbionts, though? And like, there, it's the collective memory of all these civilizations going back to the 23rd, 24th century. And maybe it's the Trills that are the ones that recall what it meant to really be the Federation. I think that's kind of amazing. It'd be awesome if they can bring back kind of a Trill character that plays a prominent role in this. Who knows what's going to be going on in the ship? It looks as if Burnham is going to be separated from the Discovery crew for an extended period of time.
Yeah, she gets like a dozen haircuts.
Yeah.
And like the Discovery crew gets the same ones.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I thought that was pretty funny.
Sorry, Saru, no new haircut for you.
It'd be amazing if they came back and he had like an afro.
Right, like a bouffant, you know.
He's just combing it the whole time. He's like Snake on The Simpsons.
Yeah, he's got like one of those like switchblades and a comb comes out. You know? That'd be awesome. Or no, it's a spade because he's really into gardening.
So he's just wearing like seaweed on his head.
Kelp.
He grows kelp out of the top of his head.
Yeah, okay. I don't know. Where are you at right now, though? Star Trek Discovery Season 3, like, I've enjoyed the series so far, yeah. But more than that, I've enjoyed the characters, and I think yeah. their weakest point has been the actual, like, plot.
Right.
You know, and if they're dropping, like, these great characters into, I think, what could be a very cool plot for them, I'm so much more excited about Discovery than I have been before.
I am really excited for Season 3 of Discovery, because the start of Season 2 was very rocky, as we talked about in our week-to-week recaps of that show, reviews of that show.
Well, we liked the premiere, and we yes, liked...
But it was rocky. Like, there was ups and downs.
But even, like, something like New Eden was good, sure. You know. But yeah. But then, Cam, there's stuff like Saints of Imperfection,
yeah,
which I still think is, like, the absolute low point of the series so far.
Right. And things seemed to really smooth out when Michelle Paradise came on board yep, as a co-showrunner. Yep. And so I'm really excited to see Season 3 with her working on the show from the get-go. Because it did feel like things were getting pretty disorganized in maybe the first half or so of Season 2. And so I want to see what happens with a more cohesive behind-the-scenes unit working on Season 3.
Did you just say disorganized?
That's exactly what I said.
Okay, anyways. Yeah, like, I don't know, like, what other, okay, like, seeing, like, Alorian, like, yeah. realized in, like, 2019 yeah. is amazing to me. Are there any other aliens? We got a Cardassian sighting as well. Any other Andorians. Aliens? We have seen the Andorians before.
We have, but we like, see, it looks like we see maybe more of them.
Are there any other, like, classic aliens that we have yet to see realized, you know, in this iteration of Star Trek that you're kind of hoping that we'd spot again? Like, not a Trill, not an Andorian, not a Tellarite, but, like, something we have not yet seen.
I mean, I'm trying to think if there's anything that jumps out. I would like to see, like, if the Klingons look different than they did in Discovery, because we are now jumping way past, you know, TNG and all that, where Klingons obviously had a very iconic look, and I'm curious if that shifts at all.
That's a really good question.
Yeah.
I don't know what to make of that. Yeah. Okay. I'll give you mine, though.
Okay.
And you're going to think, oh, why didn't I say this?
Yeah.
Ferengi.
Right, yeah.
Like, what the revised sort of image of the Ferengi are going to be like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But they're such an iconic-looking species that it must be something that will make us... Like, I don't think it's going to be as drastic as maybe, like, what the Tellarites look like, you know? Sure. But it's still going to look kind of cool. The only complaint I'll make, though, the Cardassian, and it was just, like, a split-second image.
Yeah.
Didn't he look a little too, like, polished to you? Or is it kind of hard to say?
It was pretty brief.
Yeah.
So I don't really know. Maybe when I see him on the, you know, taking up maybe a full frame on the TV, it'll look great. So
okay.
I don't know. I thought it was very interesting, though, that Discovery got a lot of flack for their season one Klingons, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they made some obvious changes to the Andorians when we first saw them. But when I saw these aliens show up on the season three teaser, they looked pretty bang on to what I recognized.
Oh, yeah. The only comment I'll make, though, is the Lorian.
Yeah.
The head does not match the body at all. It looks like a 10-year-old boy's body running around with this, like, giant head. And right. if you look at Mark Alan Shepard, who played Morn back on Deep Space Nine, I think he was wearing, like, a... like kind of a bodysuit of sorts, but it's like, sure. it looked as if his head matched his body a little bit more. Yeah. It just threw me off, though.
Yeah, well, he was kind of like the svelter Lorian, so I don't know.
Which, yeah, after giving Big Data so much trouble, yeah. you know, so like I can totally understand that, you know.
What did you make of them all having like hand cannons?
Mike, okay, the other thing, though, is like, did you notice that they had like those, well, I don't know, they had sashes on, mm-hmm. very similar to the Klingon Baldrics, so... I don't know. Like, are they kind of aligned with, like, more of these...
Morn.
but I one thing fan fiction in my head I always had in mind, like, it would make sense if the Klingon Empire was ever going to fall apart. It would devolve into more of these kind of petty kingdoms. And
right.
I wonder if maybe these petty kingdoms would be recruiting other species because they know that there's only, like, a limited warrior class amongst Klingons.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe to answer your earlier question, maybe we've already seen the revised look of the Klingons as well at this point.
Okay.
Maybe they're carrying around hand cannons and we just didn't know it.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe you just assumed it was a Beta Zed, but no. Actually, no, that's my next alien I really want to see revisited, a Beta Z. Sure. Give me the new updated look of the Beta Zs.
I'm all about the Talaxians.
Yeah. Sorry, Beta Z is a planet, Cam. I'm
that's right.
So humiliated. Beta Zoids, you know. Sorry. My apologies, listeners. Okay.
I'm mixing up the Yorktown and the Franklin, so where are you?
I know. That's so embarrassing. That's even more embarrassing.
Yeah.
Very Anglo-centric names, either way. So, Cam, the other big news that they dropped, though, is Q&A, the new short track. We've got 6 short tracks coming before Star Trek Picard premieres, which is pretty awesome.
Which really did wonders for our podcast schedule that we had mapped out.
It's not the greatest for us, but we'll take it. I think what our listeners can expect then is we'll try to compress all of our Star Trek Enterprise coverage of the two-parters a little bit more than we originally thought we were going to do. Which, I mean, even if you're not a huge Star Trek Enterprise fan, it's fun to go back and listen to these because, like, you just have an entirely new perspective. So get prepared for maybe a couple more of those episode reviews for the two-parters. But beyond that, big news, Q&A. The first one dropped over the weekend. So you and I, we've both watched Q&A twice. I made reference to it at the very beginning. I'm still sitting on your shoulders. It's really awkward for like the microphone situation.
I keep electrocuting myself on the microphone.
And you keep dropping me on the floor like a total jerk. So whatever. But so Cam, this is one where I watched it the first time.
Yeah.
And I was like, huh? what was that? Yeah. I loved it so much more the second time. But I had... Yeah. Very different expectations because Michael Chabon, he is the co-showrunner. He is a showrunner of Star Trek Picard.
Yeah.
We also got to see his work at hand with the other short trek, Calypso.
Right.
Which you and I both thought was just absolutely fantastic.
This man loves musicals, apparently.
I'm shocked to find that out based on the Gilbert and Sullivan rendition that we got here. But
yeah, but he did like Funny Face, of course, in Calypso.
Yeah. So I guess I had different expectations of what we get out of Q&A when I went into it.
Well, here's a question.
Yeah.
Should they ever use a title that has a Q in it if it doesn't feature Q?
Okay, because you and I, we did a video on YouTube and we're discussing all the clues to Q's return. And there's other speculation based on social media posts that maybe Q would be appearing in the Star Trek Picard season finale. That's something that you and I have theorized, maybe a year?
Right.
You know, so anyways, we'll take full credit if one John DeLancey shows up.
Sure.
CBS, just send the royalty checks directly to me. It's all good. I'll make sure Cam gets his 10%. And with this, though, you and I were on YouTube saying, like, look, guys, Michael Chabon is doing an episode called Q&A.
And they'd also said one of the short treks would be Picard-centric. So.
We were wrong, which is par for the course when it comes to subspace transmissions, you know. So I just think if that's your question, Cam, I think Q&A is the best Q-centric episode title that we never got realized on a Star Trek series. So that it would have been perfect.
I disagree. Q the Winged Serpent would have been the greatest.
I don't get that reference.
It's an 80s movie. There's people out there that get that one.
By people, you mean in the singular.
Probably.
Okay. So, for those, you know, just curious what we're talking about, essentially we see Spock, played by one Ethan Peck, and one number one, aka Commander Una, played by Rebecca Romijn. They get stuck in a turbolift.
Yeah.
Which, for me, if you know anything about me, I love these kind of like single setting sorts of, you know, setups for stories. Like, I think it always has such potential here.
I love stories where characters just like sit in a shuttle pod and talk for the whole episode.
Shuttle pod one.
Yeah, sure. I love those types of stories. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of them as well.
So, what did you make of this one on the first viewing? I was a little bit thrown off in that, like, I thought there was going to be some sort of like emotional rush I would get out of it. I mean, it was fun to just see, like, I really do think that this feels more kind of like the Spock that we may have been expecting for a long time, because of course he's going through a lot of mental health issues during season 2 of Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, well, and it helps underline the smiling Spock in the cage as
which
well.
Which I love. Yeah.
So they're having fun with the canon there.
Do you think a lot of fans have problems with seeing Spock laugh as he sings Gilbert and Sullivan? Like, to me, I that was the moment that surprised me most in the episode.
Sure.
And it's also my favorite moment of the episode because it kind of, like, aligns with what we saw in the cage.
Right. Yeah, I don't know that fans would have a problem with that. I think it helps settle that element of canon, which probably bothered them already.
Sure.
So, no, I don't think
that's known to laugh from a young age.
That's right.
Yeah.
And, what I loved, I think, the most about Q&A was getting to know Number One better, because she really didn't get that much to do at all in Star Trek Discovery.
It was so bizarre.
She had some action stuff in the latter couple episodes and, you know, a brief appearance in Obo for Charon. But other than that, she was largely ignored, which I thought was very strange when you cast, like, Rebecca Romijn, who's a well-known actress. Like, had they cast someone who I'm not even familiar with, someone who's just kind of a... you know, character actor, TV actress or something, I would have been like...
Dale Tickey.
Sure. Actually, I know who that is.
Okay, well, there
like,
you go.
Someone whose name I just don't even know. I'd be like...
Wouldn't you be amazed if Dale Tickey was cast as Number One?
I would be, actually.
That'd be pretty awesome.
But if had they cast someone like that, I wouldn't have been shocked if she just kind of played a background role in the series and popped up once or twice.
Yeah.
It was the fact they really hired a name that you're like, boy, it sure is strange they're backgrounding her consistently.
Okay, well, let's talk about what she got to do in this one, though. Like, are they
she
really,
had a personality.
Well, are they really telegraphing the fact that maybe she's kind of in love with one Captain Pike?
They had allusions to that in the cage as well.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I like the moment, yeah, where Spock asks her, you know, three facts about, you know, how would you sum up Pike in three sort of facts? And she gives these very thoughtful, well-realized answers, where it was funny when, like, that got thrown out in my head. I'm like coming up with these very simplistic things, and then she gives these very thoughtful answers.
He like horse.
It's like you read my mind.
Yeah.
And
you're wearing a shirt that says that right now.
And and then Spock says, like, you've really studied Captain Pike. And she just does this, like, really awkward look and is like, well, moving on. Let's try and get out of here. And so I thought that was fun. I like the idea that she has that kind of no-nonsense, woman of action type mode to her, where she's like, you can ask me all the questions you want between now and when we get to the turbo lift. And everything's very, like, you know, rapid-fire answers. I really like that stuff. Like, she's, you see that in the cage as well, as played by Maje Bear. Like, she was very capable at sort of these action, you know, dynamics. And I thought that was great to see. And I thought, like, Rebecca Romijn got to do more with it in this 12 minutes.
It sold me on the idea that they made a great casting choice and that this character could be developed further in some other avenue.
I wonder what that could be.
Well, Cam, maybe we can come back to further thoughts about, like, Q&A if we have them. But look at all the sets that we're seeing right here.
I know.
You know, how gorgeous the 1701 looks. They've got three amazing characters, you know, the prototypical triumvirates that they're working with. Like, are they just, like, taunting us by not officially announcing that a Pike spinoff is on its way? Star Trek 1701 will be coming in 2020 fall, you know?
I just don't know if they have a schedule slot yet figured out.
I know.
I think there's just all logistics. Had this been, you know, say Picard didn't exist, and they hadn't announced a Section 31 show, and this was like just, you know, all they had was Discovery, I think you would have gotten this show very quickly. But the fact they've got all this other stuff going, I think that's what's holding it up.
But it's not like they could have been, like, stunned by the response, especially if they're hiring people like Anson Mount and Rebecca Romijn to come in and do these characters and doing them so well. What a lottery ticket Ethan Peck has turned out to be as well.
Yeah.
Watching him in Q&A, I'm like, okay, the only thing that's missing, though, is he's a little stiff compared with the Nimoy delivery.
Yeah.
But I can totally explain that away in that he's Ensign Spock at this point. We've never seen Ensign Spock ever before.
Right.
So I'm down with what he's doing here.
It's also interesting in that, like, the original Spock cadence is so much of Leonard Nimoy's regular voice.
Yeah.
And so you're getting these generations of actors having to approximate the Nimoy voice because that has become the known voice for Vulcans.
Yeah. Can you approximate my voice? Do your best.
I won't even try.
Okay. Okay.
The high-pitched squealing noise. I don't know. But I mean, like...
Wow.
It just sounds like feedback into a microphone from where I'm sitting.
It's like Charlie Brown's teacher.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, like, yeah, if I were to, like, try and do your voice as an actor, I'm not an actor, but that'd be very difficult. If your voice was the model for an alien race and you had other actors come in and be like, yeah, do that. And very few could do it. Like, it's very difficult.
Very few could do it.
That's right.
That's right.
But
this
I mean,
is like, Cam Smith, tackling the weirdest, wildest, wackiest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer.
Well, on that note, I can go home, I guess. But yeah, like, I sympathize with actors coming in to play Spock.
I sympathize with actors coming in to play. Okay, I'm done.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because to me, that would be a very steep hill to climb and to make it sound natural, which is what, especially Spock, you want to do. Because Spock does have... he's a little more laid back than like a Soval in terms of his delivery.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Shout out to Gary Graham right there.
Sure, yeah.
So that moment that we see number one being like pulled up by that kind of futuristic carabiner or whatever,
mm-hmm.
That just screamed like JJ Star Trek to me with like the musical cue and everything.
Yeah, and did you notice that that Michael Giacchino was the supervising composer?
No,
on this?
I did not notice that.
Yes, because I was sitting there and I heard that music cue too, and I'm like, that's weird.
Did you just say music cue and A?
I did now. And then, and then it cuts to that end credits with that like rejiggered version of the original series theme, and I'm like, are you telling me like Jeff Russo set and composed a whole new theme for this? But it also sounds very Giacchino.
But we also know that Giacchino is directing one of these short treks coming up.
I know. Yeah. And so you're telling me they're also composing this new TOS type theme that could easily be used for your opening credits on a Pike spinoff?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's really cool. It sounds just different enough, too, to work on its own without being... Yeah, it just sounds like they're doing the TOS theme.
That's why it just seems as if like CBS is trolling us with like all these like hints of a Pike spinoff. Like the thing is, why would they put in so much effort with this if this was not meant to be? Do you think like Anson Mount is flying back to Toronto?
Yeah.
For half a day's of work just to say hi, Spock.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
This guy's like out there kind of promoting a new series.
Yeah, it seems like it, yeah. I don't get it. But I would love it if they dropped it like a Beyonce album. Like, they're like, yeah, we shot this a while back. Here's 10 episodes.
Hey, you know, you're like into the lemonade. I get it, Cam.
Sure.
So, the other thing is we also know that there's going to be a Pike short trek coming up, too.
Yeah, Lemountade. That's right.
Wow.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I wasn't sure we would even see him in this episode. And that we got this little bit at the end where he's sitting on the bridge, he welcomes Spock, and he's, you know, do Vulcans ever express awe? And I loved all that. It was just, like, really great character stuff. I thought it was so much fun.
Well, so we do that awe moment,
mm-hmm.
and that's when I was expecting to have, like, kind of this big emotional catharsis there. And when I watched it the second time, I was like, this is supposed to be like a small story, you mm-hmm. know? And I think it actually works for that. Like, this to me works so much better the second viewing than I got from the first, because my expectations, I kind of let go of whatever I thought I was going to get from a Michael Chabon sort of like short trek. And
sure.
So it works so much better for me. And it's just like, one of my biggest problems with Star Trek is like, that sense of awe and wonder just with outer space, it's often kind of stymied by the fact that you're on like these 1990s sound stages where you have a star field made out of black velvet and
the same rotating planet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, and I think that they have the opportunity to really jump on that more and more with, you know, this current era of Star Trek.
Yeah. Like their space shots look amazing. And, I am curious, though, what did you think of this moment? We've referenced it already, but this Gilbert and Sullivan moment where it's... This is really like the build-up to this moment in the episode where it's Spock and number one in the turbo lift, and she's asking about his smiling and saying it's kind of unusual to see in a Vulcan. And, you know, if you want to be a captain, think about how you're perceived, essentially. You know, you got to hide your freakiness a little bit.
I don't hide my freaky.
That's very true from this podcast.
Yeah.
you know, then she proceeds to perform Gilbert and Sullivan in a moment that I, the first time I saw it, was like, what the hell is this?
Yeah. And then the second time I saw it, it was like, hell yeah. It's like, these are the moments that you want in something so that you remember it. Like,
sure.
I like it, Cam. let's say you're in like some turbo lift for like, I don't know, 4 hours. You're going stir crazy at this point. The fact that she recoils and says and commands this new ensign, you will forget this. It shows a sense of vulnerability on her part. Mm-hmm. I totally buy it. And the first time I saw it, it did send me like kind of walking backwards just a little bit.
I was like, did it have to be this? Like, we've already seen this sort of song in Insurrection. Someone said, I think Geordi sings this same song in an episode of TNG. It might have been Disaster, even. I was like, okay, well, fair enough.
What was Geordi doing in... Oh, he was with Crusher in the cargo bay during Disaster.
Yeah.
I don't think they were singing, like, Major General
There is
song.
An episode where Geordi did sing it, apparently.
Okay.
So, yeah. I believe it was, like, a one-word title. I think it might have been Disaster, which might have been even a nod to the whole turbo lift, you know, being stuck thing with Picard in that episode. I don't know. But anyway.
You seem much more down on this than I am.
I was kind of like, ugh. Like, I'm just not a big fan of the show tunes moment.
What song would you have gone with if you are trying to deliver a character moment for Una?
Oh, God. It's so tough because I'm not even sure I would have gone with the popular song route. I'm not sure I would have had her performing a song.
Yeah, those kids listening to Gilbert and Sullivan nowadays with the pop songs camp.
Yeah. Like, I thought I was getting a poignant moment where we found out she was of some sort of alien background or something like that. Something to give a little bit of backstory to this character. And then I got that and I was like, well, it's kind of like building up to a punchline. But, okay. I didn't really enjoy it when Star Trek characters sang Gilbert and Sullivan before. And so I'm not like that over the moon for it here either.
You have so many more feelings with regards to Gilbert and Sullivan than I do. I just like, I don't know. I liked it. It worked for me. Like, yeah. I'm not hung up on this at all.
Yeah. So. I'm of mixed thoughts on it. I was far more annoyed by it the first time because I was just like, what the hell is this? The second time my response was more like, okay, yeah,
no, but you know, the fact that it's getting that kind of response out of you means that it's an effective moment that, like, you remember. You know, it's not something that you're going to forget. I think that's what they're going for.
Well,
like, I think
I remember Insurrection as well.
Yeah, that's true. But, like, the thing is, like, you want, you know, a piece of content like this to have one of those, like, oh moments where it's going to stick in your brain. And I don't know, I'm fine with this. Like, it's, believe me, the first time I saw it, I was like, what the hell? And then, like, I got into it. I was just like, no, I can totally relate to somebody who's, like, getting stir crazy in a turbo lift for hours on end with no relief in sight.
Sure.
And, I mean, props to them for being able to hold in the bathroom deal. Like I would have been suffering mega.
I think it's interesting, though, that Michael Chabon did these two musical moments, these references to musicals in both his short treks so far. I do think the funny face worked far better, though, in Calypso.
Oh, yeah.
This one,
yeah, for sure.
That one felt like it had a little more meaning to it, for, at least for me, that I walked away with.
Well, I just wish at this point that we could have gotten Commander Una to start singing about Spocky with the good hair.
Right.
Okay.
Now, what did you think of... you know, this is the first of the latest season of Short Treks.
Yeah, okay.
Last time we started with Runaway.
Which was the weakest one.
It was, but it was similarly small scale in what it was doing.
I suspect that maybe they start with... Well, it's also a thing to consider, like, how a lot of the Short Trek adventures, all of them, they would kind of pretend to what would be coming up in the second season of Discovery. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if there is something here that we should be cluing into, or I don't know, because this is a flashback one. I'm also very confused about exactly what year this takes place in.
Right.
Because if I'm doing the math with the cage, Spock was not an ensign then. So how long has he been on the ship? But then they make reference to the uniform that one Pike is wearing in the season premiere of Discovery Season 2 and how, oh, you have the new uniforms on.
Right.
If this episode takes place like 6-7 years ago, then I'm like, wait, what? Like, Starfleet's really slow to get these new uniforms out if that's what the case is. That's what I was confused by. But my suspicion, though, is maybe this was more of like the chill, low-key one. They want to ramp up excitement moving forward. So... yeah, and the other thing is, aren't there two animated, or is there just one animated short trek?
I don't remember now.
I think there might be two. Michael Giacchino's directing one,
definitely,
right?
Yeah.
And I think the producing director, I know I'm going to butcher his name, but Alatunde Osasami, if I recall correctly. I think
that's right. He is doing one, yeah.
I think he's doing an animated one as well.
Because I think we theorized, maybe incorrectly, but that like the Giacchino one would be its own thing, whereas maybe the other one might be Lower Decks themed. We thought at the time. I think we're wrong about that now.
Yeah.
But initially when they announced them, we thought maybe that would be the case.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe. It's interesting, though, that like when we looked at the schedule for the upcoming short treks, most of them had like a month between them, except they had this one out followed by another one a week later.
I think they just need to get these all out before Star Trek Picard premieres. I think that's what the goal is. So.
Yeah. And they aren't dropping one, I don't think, in January. I don't think.
No, they are.
Are they?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I'm going to be really interested to see how these hold together. I still have no comprehension as to how they're releasing these things on like home video platforms, like for like discs, you know, on like Blu-ray and stuff like that. Because they're putting, is it three of them on the new, or two of them maybe on the new Discovery Blu-ray? And it's just like, okay, I'm really confused as to what the like the future model of these is.
Don't be, because you are one of the few people I know that still buys discs.
Sure.
Like, what this is about getting additional content onto streaming platforms, which is really what the business model for a CBS All Access is dependent on. Mm-hmm. So it's just bonus features for those that still buy discs. And look, I'm still buying Star Trek Discovery discs, mainly just to get all the special features. So... Mm-hmm. And if I can't get the short treks, all of them, on my discs, what does it matter? I just go to the streaming platform that I have access to. So, yeah.
But overall, yeah, like I am excited to see short treks back again, because I do like how they offer us these little views into elements of Star Trek that the show may not have time for, especially Discovery-related ones, because that show is often moving very quickly. And so, like... I don't know that if we got a Pike spinoff, we would have moments like this in an episode that would be able to take up 12 minutes.
I know, and that's I think Star Trek works best when it's a little bit more episodic, and you can have like adventures that jump from theme to theme and genre to genre, and that's what we get with these short treks. That's why I'm digging the short treks, even if this one was... It didn't really blow me away like, say, Calypso did, or even The Brightest Star.
But it's not really trying to either.
No, and it's meant to be a small story, and I think it works on that level. It's just giving us more of those character moments that I think we honestly needed with Number One and Spock after, you know, they keep describing Discovery as having this bullet-esque pace, and I love it if you can have 15 minutes with these characters sitting around talking to each other.
Yeah, I enjoyed like the camaraderie between these two. They had genuine chemistry. And again, it just made me want to see that, you know, the Pike Enterprise spinoff that much more. Because, again, these two were a lot of fun together. And we didn't know when Discovery Season 2 ended that Number One necessarily had a lot of chemistry with Spock. But we do now.
Yeah.
And it's just that extra tease more. Now we just need to get Boyce in there. Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. Tyler, what are we doing next time?
Cam, that timing issue that we're talking about. Unfortunately, no time for Shockwave next week. We're going to have to put that off until towards the end of October. Instead, well, there's yet another short trek coming out. So that is what the problem with Edward, or the issue with Edward.
I think it's the problem, yeah.
Yeah, so look forward to our review of The Problem with Edward. And you and I, we always find like fun other things to talk about. So even if you're not following the short treks super seriously, tune on in. There's going to be other stuff, I promise.
That's right. Okay, so you can, of course, find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam, V as in Vash, 2.0, Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's R-E-P, P as in Pike, 2.0, O-R-T-O-N.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
I am the very model of a modern major general. I've information, vegetable, animal, and mineral. I know the kings of England, and I quote the fight's historical from Marathon to Waterloo in order categorical. I am very well acquainted, too, with matters mathematical. I understand equations both as simple and quadratical. About binomial theorem, I'm teeming with a lot of news. Lot of news.
Transfer complete.